Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we'll be opening with an update on the oil spill off the Santa Barbara coast and a look back at another spill off Santa Barbara nearly half a century ago that launched the environmental movement. On our Capitol report, hear about efforts by the House to curb spying powers by the NSA and about a Senate vote on fast-tracking the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. We'll have details on Governor Brown's updated state budget for California, and we'll have details on Mayor Falconer's proposed new stadium plan aimed at keeping the Chargers in town. On Crime Beat, hear about some teenagers who will be standing trial for the murder of a homeless man in Santee. Our newsmaker interview today is with environmentalist Cindy Buxton, who will be sharing progress in securing wilderness designation for the Eagle Peak area within Cleveland National Park. And from Public News Service, learn why vacationing on public lands may soon get a lot harder. Learn about efforts to help California veterans with tuition under the GI Bill today, and about an upcoming open house being held by a local state senator. On Bookshelf, Raina Menashe will interview our very own Baja blog columnist, Susan Mahalik, about her book on Baja California in Mexico. Plus, we'll also have news from the county about preparations for wildfire season. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A ruptured pipeline has caused a 9-mile-wide oil spill off the Santa Barbara coast, pumping 110,000 gallons of crude oil into the ocean, 5 times bigger than originally estimated. The environmental disaster comes 46 years after the catastrophic 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill, which was more than 40 times worse than the current mess. But for area residents, the new spill brings back troubling memories of a disaster that's taken decades to recover from. While emergency crews work to try and clean up the massive spill, campgrounds and beaches at Refugio State Beach have been evacuated due to severe air quality, water pollution, and oil oozing onto the sand as Memorial Day weekend draws near. Warnings have been issued for nearby El Capitan State Beach as the oil slick moves southward. Wildlife experts have been called in to help search for birds and animals coated in toxic oil. The leak has been repaired. That's the good news, according to the Coast Guard. But the extent of damage and cleanup needed is not yet fully known. Residue from an oil spill can linger for decades or more. Globs of oil are still visible in places like Alaska from the Exxon Valdez spill long ago. The 1969 oil spill off Santa Barbara, caused by a blowout of an oil drilling platform offshore, was the worst oil spill ever in the United States at that time. But it now ranks third after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon spill off the Gulf Coast and the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill off Alaska. The 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill killed an estimated 3,500 seabirds, as well as many marine mammals such as dolphins, elephant seals, and sea lions. Some species, such as barnacles, suffered an estimated 90% mortality. That disaster helped spark the environmental movement in the United States and led to passage of many environmental laws, launch of Earth Day worldwide, and a ban on future offshore drilling along California's pristine coastline. So it is particularly heart-wrenching to area residents and to this reporter who obtained an environmental degree from the University of Santa Barbara in the wake of that 1969 oil spill to see a pipeline burst off the shore 46 years later, pumping massive amounts of crude oil into the waters of this ecologically minded community yet again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Ed Barreno with a Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has voted to end a controversial provision of the Patriot Act. On May 13th, by a vote of 338-88, House members passed H.R. 2048 that would end the National Security Agency's collection and storage of bulk data from Americans' phone calls and other telecommunications. In a rare show of bipartisan unity, all five of San Diego's congressional members voted for the bill. But the measure faces a showdown in the Senate, where the Republican leadership opposes it. Even if it passes the Senate, it is unclear whether President Barack Obama would sign it. Instead of massive data sweeps of all U.S. residents, the bill would require that the NSA request authority from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court before searching any telecom records involving U.S. citizens. The agency would have to provide specific information to identify its target as part of a terrorism investigation. The bill also sets up an outside panel to advise and monitor the intelligence court on privacy issues and requires prompt disclosure to the public if the court were ever to approve an overly broad record search. The bill also does renew some provisions of the Patriot Act while striking down the controversial government spying provisions in the act that were due to expire on June 1st.
The U.S. Senate has voted 65-33 to take up H.R. 1314. That's a measure that would allow fast-tracking of the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Pact with no amendments or filibuster allowed. The 12-nation pact would remove or lower tariffs and duties in an effort to spark trade among the U.S. and Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. Together, these nations account for almost 40% of the world's gross domestic product, or GDP. The TPP is supported by corporate lobbying groups, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They contend that the trade deal would be good for business and the economy. It is opposed by labor and environmental groups who contend the measure would weaken labor and environmental protections, lower wages in the U.S., and lead to the outsourcing of American jobs overseas. Senator Elizabeth Warren, speaking at the California Democratic Convention, has warned that the TPP could undermine banking regulations as well. Others argue that it would be irresponsible for the Senate to approve fast-tracking of a bill written in secret that senators have not even read. California's two senators, both Democrats, split on the issue. Senator Dianne Feinstein voted in favor, while Senator Barbara Boxer voted against the fast-tracking. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Governor Jerry Brown has unveiled a $115.3 billion proposed budget for California. If approved by the legislature, his plan would create a new state tax credit to help working poor. It would also boost funding for the California State University system and freeze tuition at the University of California for in-state students. The legislature has until June 15th to approve a budget for the governor's signature. Brown's revised budget reflects revenues that have soared by $6.7 billion since January, when Brown proposed a more conservative preliminary budget. $380 tax credit for working poor could help up to 2 million people and families earning $13,870 a year or less with four or more people, according to the governor's office. The average tax credit would be $460 a year for a maximum of $2,653 that a family could receive. Brown's office indicates the new budget also invests in the quality and affordability of the state's higher education system. It calls for $38 million in additional funding for California State University, in addition to a $119.5 million increase proposed back in January, for a total of almost $158 million. The measure also requires that California State University freeze tuition and fees through the 2015-2016 school year. But the boost still falls short of the $269 million the California State University trustees had asked for, and the state college system has shut over 20,000 to 30,000 qualified students in each of the last few years due to economic shortfalls. The Los Angeles Daily News reports that Lillian Taiz, president of the California Faculty Association, said while California State University is happy to get more, the amount is disappointing, adding, "We can't get out of the hole if the state won't make an investment, and it just takes a toll on everyone involved." The University of California will receive $436 million in additional state funding to offset pension costs, and in exchange has agreed to freeze undergraduate tuition for the next 2 years for residents. The Daily Bruin, a student newspaper at the University of California, Los Angeles, faults the governor's budget for putting too much emphasis on online education, which the publication contends is unproven. Era Sharinian at the Daily Bruin writes, "This creates a slippery slope that might end in a significant loss of interaction between students and professors. We should not be continuing the trend and jumping from large classes to online classes. We should be striving for lower class sizes. As it stands, the agreement is pushing the University of California in the wrong direction," he concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barreno with a stadium report. Mayor Falconer has released his plan for funding a new football stadium in Mission Valley based on recommendations from the Citizens Stadium Advisory Group, the Union Tribune reports. The plan is for a $1.4 billion facility that would be used by the Chargers, San Diego State, and the Holiday Bowl and Poinsettia Bowl. All parties would see their rent for stadium use increase, which provides for a large portion of the stadium funding, for about $937 million. The remaining $467 million, or about 34% of funding, would be provided by taxpayers, with the county and city putting up $121 million each, coming to $7 million per year for the length of the terms, as well as an additional $225 million provided for the sale of city land. The National University System Institute for Policy Research released an analysis of the Stadium Advisory Group's recommendations. According to the report, a new stadium in Mission Valley is the most cost-effective solution and offers the quickest timeline to ultimate completion. Other key findings from the study were that the financing plan is reasonable on its projection of revenues, and the share between public and private, if achieved, would constitute an advantageous arrangement for taxpayers. The report did, however, address concerns that the most recent stadiums built average about $300 million more in building costs than the planned Mission Valley facility, which may leave San Diego on the outside when it comes to hosting a Super Bowl. Ironically, the average total of $1.7 billion is the proposed cost of building a stadium in Carson that would potentially be shared by the Raiders and Chargers franchises and would be completely funded by private sources. The teams completed a land transaction this week that will allow the stadium effort to move forward at the LA County site.
Abstinence-only sex education in public schools violates California state law. That's the finding of Judge Donald Black in Superior Court in Fresno County. In his ruling, Judge Black found that access to medically and socially appropriate sexual education is an important public right. The court specifically noted that the curriculum used by the Clovis Unified School District violated the state's 2003 sex education law by failing to include required information on sexually transmitted diseases, or STDs, as well as pregnancy prevention information, and by promoting and reinforcing bias in gender and sexual orientation and containing medically inaccurate information. The ruling came in response to a lawsuit filed by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of physicians, parents, and the Gay Straight Alliance Network. The court also awarded legal fees to plaintiffs, including the ACLU. The Clovis School District's program taught abstinence as the only means of preventing pregnancy and included a video that compared a woman who was not a virgin to a dirty shoe, also promoting bias against gay and lesbian students. Moreover, the district's failure to include information on sexually transmitted diseases put health at risk in a county where almost a third of chlamydia cases and a quarter of gonorrhea cases are diagnosed in teenagers, the judge found. As a direct result of this lawsuit, the video has been removed, and the district has adopted a curriculum that now includes accurate information about all FDA-approved methods of contraception and STD prevention. In addition, information about sexual orientation has been added to the program, and teachers have been trained to use the curriculum and teach their students in an inclusive and unbiased manner. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report. Five teenagers must stand trial for the murder of Stephen Lee Hissom, a 55-year-old homeless man who was beaten to death in Santee on November 29th of 2014. Hissom and another man, Edward Allen, were riding bicycles on a pathway along Mission Gorge Road beneath Highway 52 Bridge when the attack occurred. According to Allen, Hissom asked the defendants to move out of his way. At a preliminary hearing in the El Cajon courthouse, Allen said the assailants surrounded him and he couldn't see what was happening to his friend, 10 News reports. Allen was reportedly injured but declined medical treatment at the scene. Hissom died of blunt force injuries. The teens pled not guilty. Superior Court Judge Herbert Etzaros dismissed assault charges against the defendants and dismissed all charges against the youngest, who was 16 when the attack occurred. But the judge ordered five of the teens to stand trial for murder in a fatal beating. Cassidy Rowan, Sarah Bailey, both 18 years old, and 19-year-old Tyler Dare, Brian Kish, and Danny Swain III. If convicted, the defendants could face 15 years to life in prison.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice in Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today I am back with Cindy Buxton, a leading environmental voice, the former Sierra Club Forest Chair, and she is here with some very exciting news about a proposal to create a wilderness designation for the Eagle Peak area, which encompasses some of the most beautiful places in East County. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having me back.
Now, tell us the status of this.
The status of the recommended wilderness for the Eagle Peak area is a forest designation called Recommended Wilderness Status. It's the highest protection the U.S. Forest Service can provide an area. This is the result of a 10-year effort on their land management plan. We are extremely proud of our U.S. Forest Service for the courageous, unprecedented effort that they've come together with us to provide this area.
Well, congratulations. This is an area that's been under a lot of stress recently. We've seen the Sunrise Power Link encroach in part of Cleveland National Forest near there. There were proposals to put wind turbines up in portions of this area at one point. So clearly, the Forest Service saw a need to protect these jewels of our backcountry system, which include, I understand, Three Sisters Falls and the Cedar Creek Falls, two very beautiful, popular hiking areas. What else? Can you describe the boundaries of this?
I can. Wilderness designations come in units, and the units pull together to make a particular wilderness. We have temporarily labeled these five units the San Diego River Gorge Unit, the Eagle Peak Unit of the Eagle Peak Wilderness, the Cedar Gorge Unit, the Sill Hill Unit, which is a portion between Boulder Creek Road and the top of Cuyamaca, and then there's the No Name Unit, which basically resides north of the Viejas Reservation. What we're really proud of the fact that we put a lot of time up front years ago to ensure that we were not going to be taking a single square inch of public access. And this has been the thing that has helped bring a lot of people together.
Yeah.
This will just ensure that the status quo is maintained and all the people that still come out there to hunt and to recreate can still do so.
Yeah, it's not going to get rid of any existing roads, but it does mean that no new roads will be allowed to be built or encroach into this wilderness or any other heavy sort of industrial kinds of projects that could damage the wilderness area.
That's correct. The Forest Service, once they recommend wilderness, they will manage it as a wilderness. They have to then manage to a very high scenic integrity standard. So there will be limitations on what can happen out there.
People often ask me where exactly is Cedar Creek Falls and Three Sisters Falls and these other areas. It's an area that's roughly between Julian and Descanso and Lakeside, Ramona, yeah, up in that kind of area that you really can only get to if you hike in.
A lot of people don't yet even know where this is. After the Cedar Creek Falls had been shut down for a little while, suddenly a lot of people discovered Three Sisters Waterfall, and lots of people started showing up.
Yeah, I've hiked there myself. It is a very rugged hike, and they're working on improving that trail, I understand. But This is an area that actually is, as it sounds, a trio of waterfalls, beautiful pools, and I think all of them together are something like 200 feet tall. People have no idea this is back there often. When I've shown pictures to people, they'll say, oh, that must be Hawaii or something. They have no idea that this is out in our East County area.
It's a bittersweet situation. It's been an ecumenical question from the day I first had to look at this. You have a right to know this part of your life, and yet when you bring 600 people in there, yeah, you love it to death, and the poor locals out there are now having to deal with this. And so we really need to get everybody on the table. I always refuse to make that decision myself.
Now, the Forest Service has taken some steps to limit the traffic in at least one of these areas, the Cedar Creek Falls area, by imposing permits. So there's a limited number of people that are allowed to go in at any one time, correct?
That's correct, at Cedar Creek Falls, yes.
And that came about after a tragedy, a young man who fell to his death up there.
Right, and I don't want to motivate a decision by tragedy. We want to be very forward-thinking in how we set the policies.
What is the next step here? The Forest Service currently is managing this as wilderness, even though it hasn't formally been declared such. Does that take an act of Congress to do?
It takes two-thirds majority of Congress, and
wow,
this is not an easy thing. People say, well, you better hurry up and get your wilderness bill, and it's completely unrealistic. Sometimes that happens.
Is there a bill that's been introduced yet, or is it in the works?
Yeah. Between 1998 and about 2006 or 7, they did introduce the California Wild Heritage Act three times to Congress. It was such a sweeping bill of 1 million acres all across California that it did bring a lot of awareness to what was out there, but that's not very realistic that a bill that size is going to pass.
Where do our San Diego delegates, there are five of them, where do they stand on wilderness designation for this area, do you know?
It all kind of came to a screeching halt in the wave across the Sunrise Power Link and the climate change. It went pretty quiet. And I would say that it does get somewhat divided across party lines.
So you're saying the Republican representatives are—
Not necessarily those, because sometimes the best decisions, the really tricky ones, have been made because we had a bipartisan effort, and it's not been that unusual that it was the Republicans that came in and saved the day, so to speak. Susan Davis definitely has been on board from the beginning. It was Senator Boxer's bill, but now it's become a little more tricky. I don't see this getting introduced to Congress for a little while.
And so is it something, if people care about this, should they reach out to their congressional representatives, for example, Congressman Hunter, Congressman Vargas, our East County representatives, and urge them to also get on board to support this?
Absolutely. I mean, there is nothing to go ahead and start priming the pump. Those 600 people that love Three Sisters every weekend, send a picture to the forest supervisor, send it to the Sierra Club, send it to the Eagle Peak site on Facebook, and definitely send it to your congressman. Even Congressman Hunter, I actually have enjoyed the conversations I've had with Hunter. You don't necessarily think of him as the environmental activist congressman, but I can tell you this much about Duncan Hunter. He does look after his own people, and it's actually been much more refreshing than you would think. I've seen him.
Well, he likes to protect areas for hunters to go hunt, so you do need some outdoor areas preserved for that, I suppose.
I actually made friends with the San Diego Wildlife Federation. It was actually a lot of fun talking to them. And once they understood that we were not taking the access away, I made friends with a lot of the off-roaders. And none of them are going to say, oh, yay, wilderness. But the fact is, we didn't have to have a battle either. And that was definitely a huge step. I found Duncan Hunter to be much more approachable than a lot of activists would tell you that. And so
What about the two coastal representatives who people that are listening from San Diego might want to reach out to? Have you heard anything from Daryl Issa or Scott Peters on this issue?
I don't know where Scott Peters stands on it, and Daryl Issa typically would not. However, he was very supportive of the San Diego River Gorge portion. And he did have a bill to the north, and it did not pass yet, but there was a lot of work on that one, and we definitely appreciate that that collaboration.
And, of course, there's Senator Feinstein. Senator Barbara Boxer has authored wilderness legislation in the past.
Yes.
Okay. If people want to look at pictures and find out more about the Eagle Peak Wilderness Area that is recommended now by the U.S. Forest Service for Protection Forever, where can they find those?
Currently, the photos that I have posted on Facebook, it's www.facebook.com/Eagle Peak, one word. There are a lot of photos of this area, and it was just information only. It's not directions to get anywhere. Like I said, this has been a bit of an ecumenical question if you seek it out. I hesitate because I know that we have issues with that road, and I don't have a perfect answer, but the answer and the suggestions that we have made have been to basically put in permitting so that we limit the numbers at any one time down in Three Sisters. It's not the only suggestion, and I'm not the Forest Service who has those resources. So it's, it's the intent to solve the problem, not the content and what suggestions I have, but I'm not sure logically what else they can do.
Now, there is one related issue people may want to weigh in on also if you're one of those folks that likes hiking to Three Sisters Falls, and that is that there is a proposal right now by the Forest Service to redo the trail, which is, it's a very rugged trail. It's actually somewhat treacherous in places. What are your thoughts, Cindy, about the proposals that have been put forth on that? And can you give us any details about what some of the changes are that the Forest Service has in mind to make for that?
The trail that's been proposed is epic. You couldn't go wrong. I walked it with them. A few suggestions about some environmental concerns, and before the day was over, myself and the rec officer that I think the absolute world of, had come to kind of a consensus on this. I don't think that you could do anything in that gorge that wouldn't be breathtakingly beautiful. And fortunately, this would be a lot safer. There's just no rhyme or reason to send people into something that is not safe.
No, I know. The time I hiked it, I was very surprised. I went with a bunch of friends, and we got about halfway down this really steep, rugged, hot, you know, no shade trail, and someone handed me a rope and said, okay, now you have to rappel down 20 or 30 feet. And I said, what? You know, I had no idea. And there are places where there was loose gravel, and almost all of us were slipping and scraping our knees, and I was really surprised, given the amount of traffic out there, the number of people who love to go see this beautiful place, that it was that actually dangerous.
Me too. I mean, 8 years ago, there'd be two or three people there, if that. The Forest Service obviously did not make that trail. That trail came many, many years before them. It's been in Jerry Shad's, the late, great, wonderful Jerry Shad's, A Foot in the Field in San Diego for
the hiking guide,
lot of years. It just didn't come into its own until the internet and social media. And I can tell you, it's such a wonderful mixed blessing. If I'm feeling down and out and I want to go out there with a couple gallons of water and give it to people who don't have enough water and start talking to them, they're wonderful. Even for being dehydrated and tired, they are amazed at what they're seeing, and they all are very anxious to know how to do this better, and it's a great thing. And
We should caution that if you are going to check these places out and go hiking, they do have more rescues out of these two falls than any of the other popular attractions out there in East County. Bring lots and lots of water. We're talking probably a gallon.
The Forest Service recommends no less than a gallon per person.
Yeah,
and alcohol, don't bring your dog.
Don't bring your dog. They've had dogs, you know, not make it. And
thank you for bringing that up, yes.
Leave the alcohol at home. It's actually prohibited. You can get ticketed by the sheriff out there, at least at Cedar Creek Falls, for that.
Yeah, I'm not the sheriff, but the water is the number one issue. And I've even put up signs out by the freeway so that when people get to the Perkins store, they can stop and buy water. Because what I found is you go all the way out there, they will take that pint of water and keep going. And it was very dangerous.
Yeah, it was. Lots of rescues. Perkins store is in Descanso on the road in there. Well, Cindy, I am certainly looking forward to hiking that trail with you when it's finished and checking it out, and to keeping our readers abreast about the efforts to declare the Eagle Peak area wilderness designation.
I do. The main concern on my mind right now is how do we give people this experience that they certainly have every right to have and still not love it to death and not encroach upon our local neighbors. A lot of people don't realize it, but the locals are the eyes and ears out there, and they really, some of them have taken it upon themselves to do a wonderful service and keep everybody informed what goes out there. So I think that we should respect that, and we'll pull our heads together, and I'm sure we'll resolve this somehow.
Very good. Listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Cindy Buxton, a leading environmental voice and former Sierra Club Forest Chair, about the spectacular Eagle Peak area out in Cleveland National Forest that is now recommended by Cleveland National Forest for formal wilderness declaration just as soon as they can get Congress to take action. And in the meantime, it is being protected as a wilderness right now. Cindy, I'm going to give you the final thoughts here today before we close.
I would like to say I'm so proud of our Forest Supervisor Will Metz for the efforts that he's made on the Cleveland in the Eagle Peak area and his wonderful staff. And let's keep the communication going, because that's the most important thing.
Very good. Thank you so much, Cindy, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Vacationing in the Sierra Nevada, California desert, or other public lands could change dramatically if the push to turn federal lands over to state control succeeds. Jamie Williams, president of the Wilderness Society, is issuing the warning and says allowing state control would lock up lands for private development and other parcels would be sold by states to pay for managing additional land.
Well, this is a terrible idea that is totally out of sync with the way Americans value our parks, our forests, and wildlife refuges. They don't want to see their lands turned over to states and sold to the highest bidder.
William says the push to privatize public lands originates with special interests and their allies in Congress and could bring the biggest changes to lands in the West. Backers of the idea claim the states would be better managers of federal properties and say there's a legal precedent for state control. Professor John Leshy at the University of California, Hastings, says there's a long history of court decisions affirming the federal government's rights to hold land and that this type of case would probably be laughed out of court.
It has nothing to do with the law, and it's not a legal claim. It's all about politics. I mean, it's all about stirring up the base, tapping into the anxiety or hatred or whatever you want to call it that some people have about federal ownership of land in the West.
Williams says the move for state seizure of public lands is overshadowing the urgent need to reauthorize the Land and Water Conservation Fund, an important program that helps pay for parks, trails, baseball fields, and more in just about every county in the country.
For 50 years, this program has played an essential role in protecting places people love and getting Americans outdoors.
The LWCF expires at the end of September unless Congress takes action. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a street fair and craft beer festival in Santee, an arts and crafts fair in Julian, a concert on the green, and a tea party for Mother Goose.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a production of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, a fiddle contest, a wildlife artist reception, the Taste of La Mesa, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much more.
El Cajon's Concert on the Green will feature the Soul Persuaders this Friday night, May 22nd, from 6 until 8 p.m. The free outdoor concert will be held at 201 East Main Street in El Cajon. For details, see downtownelcajon.com.
The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival, organized by Santee's Chamber of Commerce, will be held on Saturday, May 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This large festival features local breweries from around San Diego County, live music and entertainment, a crafter row, an artist alley, and over 300 food and vendor booths, carnival rides, and games for the family. In celebration of Memorial Day weekend, there will also be a tribute to veterans. Admission is free, though there is a fee for beer tasting. The location is at the junction of Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway. For details, visit SanteeStreetFair.com.
Julian hosts its Arts and Crafts Fair on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Organized by the Julian Fireplugs, the event benefits the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District and will be held at 2033 Main Street in Julian.
The 16th Annual Royal Tea Party will benefit the Mother Goose Parade and Scholarships. The tea will be held on Saturday, May 23rd, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Foothills Christian Church, 365 West Bradley Avenue in El Cajon. A fashion show by Glamour Girls and more will be held. Prizes will be awarded for the best dressed tables. The event is sponsored by Mother Goose Parade Association, Foothills Church, and Alpine Stagecoach Lions. For reservations, call 619-726-6488. And now for a preview of coming attractions.
San Diego Legends is an annual recognition of San Diego elders who lead by example. The Legends exhibit is comprised of paintings by famed local artist Mona Mills and photography by San Diego County Library Director Jose Ponte. This year's Legends are former County Director of Social Services Cecil Stepp, Renaissance Man John Howard, UCSD Ethnology Professor Robert Alvarez, author Jacqueline Gamach, and Filipino press writer activist Aurora Kudal. The exhibit debut and reception will be held Friday, May 29th at 6 p.m. at the Lemon Grove branch of the County Library. The reception will include meet and greet with the Legends, music by Richard Favale, a dance performance by the County's Filipino American Employees Association, and refreshments.
Also in Julian, the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association's District 7 presents the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest on Saturday, May 30th at Julian's Town Hall in the historic gold mining town of Julian. Building on the decades-long history of the former Julian Banjo and Fiddle Contest, the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest provides fiddlers, guitarists, mandolin player, and banjo players with an opportunity to demonstrate their talents in a festive and friendly atmosphere. For details, visit sandiegofiddler.org.
The Crimson River Quartet will perform a free concert featuring a rich blend of harmony on Saturday, May 30th at 6 p.m., The concert will be held at the Lakeside Christian Church on El Monte Road in Lakeside as the church celebrates 60 years at the site.
The art exhibition Wild Graces features photography from two award-winning photographers, Jody Holden and Robert Treat. This exhibit will be on display in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Art Gallery from May 23rd through June 19th. The public is cordially invited to a reception in honor of the artist on Sunday, May 31st from 1 to 4 p.m. in the Visitor Center. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
Upstart Theater Company presents its inaugural production, William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, hosted by the Valhalla Theater Arts Department on June 4th and 5th at 7 p.m. at the Valhalla High School Theater on Hillsdale Road in El Cajon. Upstart, founded in 2015, is comprised of and run entirely by students from schools throughout the Grossmont Union High School District. Dedicated to keeping classical works of theater alive on the modern educational stage, this is the first time ever that a fully student-run play has been produced at Valhalla, and the first time students from multiple schools have collaborated to perform a play. This rollicking comedy takes us on a hysterical romp through 1930s Illyria, featuring mistaken identity and found love. For tickets, visit ValhallaTheater.com.
The Red Cross will be holding a blood donation drive to help save lives on June 30th from 12 noon to 6 p.m. at the Grossmont Center in La Mesa in the Walmart parking lot. Giving blood is a simple thing to do that can make a big difference in the lives of others.
Attention bargain hunters, the rural community of Guate will hold its third annual community yard sale on Saturday, June 6th, starting at 7 a.m. The sale will be held on Old Highway 80 in Guate, located a mile west of Hilltop Supply.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to eat your heart out at the 7th Annual Taste of La Mesa, featuring tastings from 29 local restaurants. This year's delicious event will be held on Monday, June 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center on Community Drive. Discount tickets are available before June 4th. For tickets and details, visit lamesachamber.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with some good news for California veterans and family members seeking an education. The United States Department of Veterans Affairs has announced that all veterans and dependents using the GI Bill benefits shall receive temporary in-state tuition status through the end of the year, regardless of their state of residence. Keith Boylan, CalVets Deputy Secretary for Veterans Services, says the action ensures that students using GI benefits in California are able to continue training at their chosen institutions and receive in-state tuition status. The policy impacts veterans and dependents who enroll in all institutions within 3 years of the veteran's qualifying discharge. Bob McDonald is Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He states, "Our military members and their families make sacrifices that require them to pack up and move with little notice. They shouldn't be penalized after they leave military service by burdensome residency requirements. This waiver will allow students to continue receiving the GI Bill benefits they've earned as states work to comply with this important law." A list of states that are in compliance is posted on the GI Bill website. VA will update the list as more states become compliant. The resident rate provisions of the CHOICE Act generally cover veterans as well as their spouses and children who live in the state where they are attending school who are enrolled within the 3 years of the veteran's qualifying discharge. To remain approved by the VA, schools must charge tuition and fees at the resident rate to those covered individuals.
And coming up next, our bookshelf host, Raina Menashe, will be interviewing East County Magazine's very own Baja blogger, Susan Mihalik, about her book for folks interested in living or traveling in Baja, California.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Susan A. Mihalik, author of My Gold Coast Baja, Practical Guide, which has recently been released in its second edition and as an ebook. Welcome, Susan. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you.
Let's start with the topic of your book, Baja California, or more specifically, the northern tip of Mexico. You moved there from San Diego 11 years ago, and you moved by yourself without a book like yours to follow. Start by telling us a little bit about that journey and what it is about Baja that drew you then and draws you still.
Well, what happened, actually, is I was going down there for long weekends with a friend that had a house down there, and I noticed after a while I started crying coming back this way on a Sunday evening.
Really?
And I said, I have a solution for that. I was living in Hillcrest at the time, which was very expensive.
Yes.
And I found a place down there for $400 for a house.
Wow.
Now, I didn't realize at the time that my commuting costs were going to make it almost equivalent to living up here by the time you do the insurance in two countries and everything else that's in there. But it was just a comfortable place to live, and actually the demographic is largely single women.
Really?
Which you don't find out till you live there. So mm-hmm. for me to say that it's safe down there, I can say that with certainty. I don't know of a single person who's gotten killed that's an American in almost 12 years.
Now, why do you think that the media gives the impression that it is so unsafe?
Well, certain parts of Mexico are. I've already been told I don't want to travel to Sinaloa. I don't want to go to Jalisco. Everybody's heard about Ciudad Juarez, which is right across the border from Texas, where mm-hmm. it's so dangerous, it's crazy. So, like any other country, you have to be very careful about where you are. I would never even visit Detroit in the United States.
Right.
But where I am, it's totally safe. There's 2,000 people in the little town of La Misión. And most of the activity of violence is between the cartel and the police and the military. It doesn't involve a regular citizen at all, ever.
Civilians. And what about finding work in Baja? Is that something that people do or no? They don't.
No, Americans can't find work down there.
Typically,
they are retired and they start their dream business. Two of my best friends down there are winemakers.
Ah.
Now, for them to start a wine business up in Napa or Sonoma would have been almost impossible.
Right.
And my one friend actually makes wine on her back porch.
That's a good story. Well, let's go to your book. It's been called A Primer and Guide for Those Considering Visiting or an Extended Stay in Mexico. Tell us more about the format and purpose of the book. I know you have photos from David Worthy that you include. You have anecdotes and advice on things like medical care and how to move in the first place. So give us a snapshot of your book.
Well, what happened is I started writing for the Baja Times, which Dennis Moore has also written for as a freelancer. And I found that people were really responding to my articles. So, of course, I saved all of those. And then I added in things like the medical care, how do you move there, what's food shopping like, how should you dress in Baja. I mean, leave the gold jewelry at home. Don't cover yourself and make yourself look, you know, ostentatious when you
right.
go out. So it's a primer of how to live there as far as heating your home and all of that, but it's also a sampling of the wineries and the different great restaurants. But I didn't make it like a farmer's guide. I made it
right.
a sampler, I call.
So you use the photos to capture the beauty, not just the information.
Right. It's not all-inclusive, but I found when I was there for the first year, every day was like this huge learning curve. You're in a brand-new country.
Yes.
And everything's different. And so this, I've had people read it that have just moved there, and they find it invaluable. Because
mm-hmm.
now they've got, they know at least now to get insurance and what Medicare care is like and dental care,
mm-hmm.
which is a fraction of what it is up here.
Right. And what about the language barrier? Did you know Spanish when you moved there? Did you learn it while you were there?
Well, I had the high school Spanish still back in the brain somewhere, and I find just like any other experience, you just start, you jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would talk to the border guards, or I would talk to the person checking out my groceries. I didn't know very much Spanish, but it's almost all English-speaking
mm-hmm.
because it is so close to the border. The wait staff, the medical people, the doctors,
mm-hmm.
everybody speaks English. So there is no barrier, really.
Interesting. You're from New Jersey. And I know, as an East Coaster, that that's many worlds and cultures away from your current home. Describe for us the locale that you have fallen in love with, the one that most tourists don't see. What are a few of Baja's hidden places?
Oh, that's Guadalupe Valley. That's the wine valley. Now, I brought a bottle of wine up here once to somebody that was really familiar with Sonoma County. He didn't know they'd even made wine in Baja, which is the major wine-growing region. And I'm only 35 minutes away on just a really simple, easy road. And also, what's really interesting about Guadalupe Valley is that there's starting to be these five-star chefs showing up, like Drew Deckman, who had a place in Cabo, and he just closed it, and he's got an outdoor restaurant. They're called campestres. Basically, they put up a wood grill and some kind of shade, and it's a restaurant. No overhead cost. And they're springing up, I'd say, about one every 3 months. There's a new one that opens. And they're amazing. Things like octopus on the grill.
Oh, that sounds good.
And here's another weird one. How about a salad, a romaine lettuce salad that's wood-fired?
On the grill.
On the grill.
I've never heard of that.
But it was very good. And it's really reasonable. A meal for a person in the Wine Valley for lunch is $15.
Speaking of money, let's go a little bit more into the financial side of it. The real estate and tax prices that you quote in the book are fantastic. What is the financial side of life typically for an American relocating to Baja, other than the less expensive house or apartment?
Well, it's not just that. What most Californians fell in love with when they cashed in their property up here is that the average property that runs about $300,000, the taxes per year are $250 per year, which is phenomenal. Now, I pay $300 for a studio apartment with fantastic views in a gated community.
You can't beat that. what about the medical care, the food? Is it just everything across the board?
Everything's cheaper with the exception of Coca-Cola and beer.
Oh,
I just had a filling last week, and their dentists down there are very caring, and people actually come from France to get dental care in Baja. I guess they have expensive dentists there, too. I had a filling put in. It was very extensive. She drilled for at least half an hour, and it was $25.
Okay. Now, what about the social life? In your book, you talk about how easy it is to make friends over there and get involved in the local art scene, which I find interesting. In your opinion, what is it about Baja that creates a welcoming community for Americans, other than having other Americans there? What is it that is so welcoming?
Well, I found in San Diego, everybody was either on the freeway or working two jobs or doing whatever they had to survive, whereas down there you mostly have retirees. So they had time on their hands. I made good friends within the first 6 months of being there. Whereas I had difficulty in San Diego because I might make a friend and they would be 40 miles from where I live.
Right, right.
But then there's all these different groups you can get into. You can take up horseback riding. You can take up bridge. There's two groups that I think are wonderful for all the single women called Ladies That Lunch. And so we go to these fantastic restaurants you wouldn't normally dream of going to, like Mission 19 in Tijuana,
right,
and sit there and eat for 4 hours for $40 with drinks.
Now, are there single men there as well? Is that something that is part of the equation? Sometimes?
Sometimes. Well, I consider there's almost two camps. There's the people that sit all day in bars and drink, and of course I don't count them. But you do meet men at events, by and large, especially like a wine event. Tomorrow night I'm going to a tequila tasting. That's for my favorite charity, which is the libraries down there. The Americans have made a major impact on all the volunteerism that they do there.
Awesome. And they have good libraries there, too.
They do
like
now.
Okay.
Because the Americans kind of made that their impact.
And that's very important. Especially for a writer, right? And readers. One more question, Susan. What's next? Is there another book in the works? And if so, will it cover a similar topic or something else entirely?
Well, the new neighborhood I moved into, my two neighbors on one side, Jerry and David, lived in a place called Angel's Camp. You know, that's off the grid, which means there's no sewer, there's no water, there's no electricity. And there's a few little places down there. The cover of my book is Campo Lopez, which is another one. But I'm doing a book on Angel's Camp because there's been all of these fascinating people that move there. And people like lawyers and architects from LA that went down there and bought a place on the beach for like $2,000 back in the day. It started in the 60s. It's still fairly active. And I crashed a pig roast there the day after 4th of July. And I was just like, they were so welcoming, and they're like, come back, interview us. We're glad to be part of this project. So I'm going to do a total departure and do something that's about a community that brought surfers and architects and all these different people down to a place where they had to bring coolers and Coleman lanterns initially.
Fascinating. Look forward to seeing that. Our time is up, Susan, but thank you again for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here. I've been excited about this for ever since I knew I was going to be doing this interview. Thanks for having me here.
For more information on Susan Mihalik and her work, please visit her Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Susan.Mihalik, which is M-A-H-A-L-I-C-K. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
State Senator Joel Anderson will be listening to constituents and inviting ideas to improve state government at a community coffee on Thursday, May 28th, starting at 6 p.m. at Santee City Hall. The free event, open to the public, will be hosted by Santee Mayor Randy Vopel. Anderson says that about 40-60% of the bills he introduces every year originate as ideas from people in his district. His 38th State Senate district includes Poway, Santee, El Cajon, La Mesa, and most of the unincorporated areas in East County. Senator Anderson is also a candidate running for county supervisor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A big show of force at the Ramona Air Attack Base as government agencies came together to warn San Diego of the potential for large wildfires this season, a natural disaster we are all too familiar with.
First to speak was Tony Meacham with the San Diego County Fire Authority.
San Diego County has a long history of wildland fires. The Mount Laguna Fire of 1970, the Palomar Fire in 1987, the Harmony Fire of 1996, the Pines Fire of 2002, the Cedar Fire in 2003, the Rice, Pumacha, and Harris Fire in 07, and recently, last May, with the Bernardo Fire, the Cocos Fire, and the Poinsettia Fire.
The Forest Service, CAL FIRE, San Diego Sheriffs, even the Navy were all here to illustrate the cooperation that exists to quickly respond to a fire in the region.
Next up was Supervisor Bill Horn.
We're in a drought. Huge drought, and I happen to be a grower who uses water. So we're cutting back on that, and we would just tell everybody else, not only just cutting back, but be observant, be aware. Let us keep putting these fires out at less than 10 acres.
CAL FIRE Chief Ken Pimlott warned of the increasingly difficult conditions facing firefighters.
We are in the fourth year of an unprecedented drought. What this means is statewide, we are seeing vegetation conditions that are drier than they've ever been, and they are creating fire behavior and conditions that fires are burning in that are unprecedented. When fires escape initial attack, we've seen them grow last year as much as 15 miles in one day.
Officials are urging residents to help prepare by creating defensible space around homes and having a disaster plan at the ready. More information can be found at readysandiego.org. In the County News Center, I'm Dominic Fulgoni.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.